Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shir is Chulin Daf Zayin. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. In our previous shiur, we left off in the middle of a discussion. The topic that we had been dealing with was Rebbe's ruling that the area of Beis Shan. Beis Shan is a location in the northern part of Israel, and Rebbe ruled that there is no need to tithe the Hafroshes, Trumas, and Maaseres from produce that grows in that location. This particular ruling had arisen the wonderment of those around Rebbe, and the Gemara said that one should not be amazed when a Talmud Chacham rules something. One has to give it some thought and see the depths of it. As the Gemara goes on, and as we said, we left off in the middle of that discussion, we are going to investigate more about the issue of Beis Shan, and our Gemara begins about 9 lines from the top of the page. The word maskif appears in the middle of the line. Maskif law, Rabbi Yehuda, Braid, Rabbi Shimon ben Pazi. Umi ikal lemanda omar de Beis Shan lav me'eretz Yisrael hi. Is there anyone who could possibly hold that Beis Shan is not part of the land of Israel? After all, Rebbe's ruling that says it's exempt from tithing would seem to indicate that Rebbe is of the opinion that it's not part of Eretz Yisrael. But that's a very difficult position to take. V'hoksiv, there is a posuk that says, V'loi hoirish menashe es Beis Shan ves benoiseho ves ta'anach ves benoiseho. This posuk features the period of time that the tribes of Israel, that the nation of Israel, was conquering the land. And we see that Beis Shan was from those areas that were expected to be conquered and part of Eretz Yisrael. So it's very difficult to understand how Rebbe could arise and matir Beis Shan, and namely indicate that it is exempt from tithing. The question we just heard was raised by Rabbi Yehuda Bray, Rabbi Shimon ben Pazi. The Gemara says that apparently it escaped Rabbi Yehuda Bray, Rabbi Shimon Pazi, the following teaching, the teaching that we'll see shortly in the name of Rabbi Elazar ben Shammua, which indicates that in fact it was part of Eretz Yisrael, but that does not in and of itself mean that Beis Shan shall have tithing take place, and that will be explained very shortly. Before we go further, we just want to take note that the response to Rabbi Yehuda Braid, Rabbi Shimon Pazi's question is in the form of a long answer. You can see to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text a tuf, letter tuf that's encircled, with a descending vertical dashed line. This indicates the length of the question, of the answer, that is, the teretz. So the Gemara says, Ishtamitze, it escaped him, that namely Rabbi Yehuda. Ha di Omar Rabbi Shimon ben Elokim Mishum Rabbi Elazar ben Pedos Shamar Mishum Rabbi Elazar ben Shammua. The following halacha that was said in there in his name, in the name of Rabbi Elazar ben Shammua, Harbe Krochim Kovshum Ole Mitzrayim Velo Kovshum Ole Bavel. The Jewish people, when they entered the land of Israel at the time of Yoshua, that's the first entrance, we can say, the Ole Mitzrayim, those that left Egypt and eventually entered the land of Israel. they conquered more area
than the returnees in the time of the second return, namely the time of what's referred to often as the time of Ezra and Nehemiah, Ole Bovel.
So the Gemara is telling us that there were more locations that were conquered in the time of Ole Mitzrayim than were at the time of the Ole Bovel, the second entrance to the land, and after the Babylonian exile. As a result of those areas that were originally conquered and not subsequently conquered, though the areas that were not overlapped, namely areas conquered only by the Ole Mitzrayim and not by Ole Bovel, did not regain the sanctity that they had as a result of the first conquest. The Kosovar Kedusha Rishona Kitcha L'Shaito V'Loi Kitcha L'Osid Lavo. The opinion reflected here, and that's the approach that Rebbe is taking, that the Kedusha Rishona, the first sanctity, was imparted unto the land on a non-permanent basis. Kitcha L'Shaito would mean on a temporary basis, the low Kitcha L'Osid Lavo, and not on a permanent basis. So that when the Jews experienced the Babylonian exile, at that point, there was an expiration of the Kedusha Rishona, and if at the time of Ezra and Nehemiah the areas were not reconsecrated, so they did not regain the necessary Kedusha that would mechayev, that would require tithing. And the Gemara goes on to explain v'hinichum, in the time of Ezra, when they came back after the return from the Babylonian exile, they left them without a second sanctification. And why did they leave them that way? Kedei shiyismichu aleihem aniyim b'shvius, so that during the Shemitah year, when agricultural activity is prohibited, it is prohibited in areas that have been, that were sanctified or re-sanctified. Those areas that were left outside of those boundaries, namely areas that may have been conquered at the time of the Ole Mitzrayim, but not at the time of the Ole Bovel, Beis Shan being one of those areas, the dinim, the rules of Shvius, do not apply to those areas. As a result, those areas which are next to the sanctified areas, the unsanctified areas can be cultivated, and the impoverished, the poor, will have a means of a source of food during the Shemitah year, during the seventh year of the seven-year cycle when agricultural activity is prohibited. People who had means were able to store up food because of their financial ability. They could store up food during the sixth year of the cycle in anticipation of the seventh year. But the poor didn't have that ability, so an alternative existed for them, that they could find food in these areas outside of the second Kedusha boundaries. And as we mentioned, Beis Shan was one of those. Omer lei Rabbi Yirmiyah le Rabbi Zera. Before we go on, we're now about to encounter a series of triangles. In our Mivneh explanation, that's a structural note that accompanies the Gemara when new symbols appear, we have noted in the outside margin, you can see there's a little triangle, Retzef Shel She'elos, a series of questions, Shebohen HaGemara Mefakpekes B'Yechulis Lahasik Maskonos, where the Gemara casts a doubt on the ability to reach a conclusion based on Rebbe Meir's behavior. Remember, from our last year, Rebbe Meir was seen eating a leaf from apparently an edible leaf from vegetables without having tithed. So the Gemara here will raise questions about can any real legal conclusions be reached based on the Rebbe Meir incident? Shebeis Shan Ein Bo Kedushas Eretz Yisrael Mehanagoso Shel Rebbe Meir. This point will become much clearer as we go on in the Gemara. So the Gemara once again will raise a doubt will raise doubts concerning the ability to draw conclusions from Rebbe Meir's eating of the produce that was featured on Vav Amud Beis without tithing. We, up till this point, we're trying to conclude that the incident of Rebbe Meir's eating that took place in Beis Shan was an indicator that Beis Shan did not receive the second Kedusha of the time of the returnees from the Babylonian exile, thereby leaving Beis Shan outside the realm of Kedushas Haoretz. The Gemara here asks, Rabbi Yirmiyah asks Rabbi Zera, V'ho Rabbi Meir ole be'alma hu d'ochil. All Rabbi Meir ate was a leaf. A leaf is a type of eating that's called achilas aroi. Achilas aroi is a type of consumption that is allowed even without tithing. In other words, it could very well be have been a place where tithing is required, not like Rebbe concluded. And if you ask if tithing is required, so how could Rebbe Meir eat what he did without tithing? The answer to that is he was eating only a leaf, which is called achilas aroi, a non-established form of eating, a non-formal eating, a snacking, if you will. And snacking type eating is allowed prior to tithing, so that Rebbe Meir's eating doesn't necessarily show that Beis Shan did not receive its second sanctification. Omar Le, so Rabbi Zera answers Rabbi Yirmiyah in the story involving Rabbi Meir, me aguda achle. He ate the leaf from a bunch. In other words, like certain vegetables are bunched together, they're tied up. Often you find carrots are sold like this, and other vegetables. And he pulled the leaf out from a bunch. Utnan yerek haneegad mishiegad. The Tanaic source teaches us that those kind of vegetables that are customarily tied together in bunches, that establishes them as needing to be tithed. And when you have something that's nikba lemaiser, that's established as needing to be tithed, from that point on, it's considered full-fledged tevel. Tevel is the term for untithed material, and even achilas aroi would be prohibited. So how could Rebbe Meir eat without eating a leaf from a bunch of vegetables that are customarily tithed? How could he eat from that and not tithe from it? So that's what led Rebbe to think that Beis Shan does not have the sanctification necessary to make it chayev in Trumas and Maisers. Question, the Dilma Lavadate. Now, maybe Rebbe Meir simply slipped up. Maybe he didn't pay attention. He forgot. Maybe he forgot that it's a Yerek HaNeegad, and hence Achilas Aroi is Osir. The Gemara answers now with an answer that really is what's responsible for our bringing this entire story in the first place. On Daf Vav Amud Beis, we noted that this story began with a bowtie form, and this was the second of two stories with bow tie forms, and the point of these stories was what they had in common, this idea that the righteous do not slip up when it comes to matters of food, of eating. So the Gemara points that out over here. How can you even suggest that maybe Rebbe Meir's eating without tithing was simply a mistake or a slip up? The Gemara answers, Hashto behemton shel tzadikim eina kodesh baruch hu mevi takola al yodon. Mind you, the animals of the righteous are not allowed, are prevented through divine intervention from eating that which is forbidden. Tzadikin atzmon lo kol shekein. When it comes to the righteous themselves, all the more so, if the behemoths, if the animals are zeicher, merit divine protection from mistake, then it's the righteous themselves all the more so. So to suggest that Rabbi Meir ate something forbidden through an oversight or a mistake, that's very unlikely. Question, V'dilma nosan einov, V'dilma iser aleha mimokom acher. Maybe Rabbi Meir, who ate from the leaf, from the Ole Shel Yerek, he had actually tithed it by setting aside produce in another place, and the setting aside of the produce in the other place was done in order to exempt this bunch. The Gemara says, no, Rabbi Meir would not have done that. Lo nechshedu chaverim. Chaverim is a term used for those that are concerned with hafroshes, trumas, and meisers, people that are knowledgeable, we'll say, in these areas. They are not suspect. Lo nechshedu chaverim litroim to tithe shelo min hamukav, from produce that's not attached to the food that we are trying to exempt. In other words, to say that there was some kind of long-distance tithing, that would not have taken place, because people that are chaverim don't do it like that. Rashi explains the reason for that is that if you're when you come to eat the produce that you were assuming was the beneficiary of being tithed, maybe the stuff that you set aside as the tithe is not there anymore, got destroyed. And if that's the case, you would have to, you wouldn't have what to rely upon in order to eat this particular item. So we want to have it all together so you see the status of everything. Question: V'dilma nosan einov b'tzad zev ochal b'tzad acher. Maybe Rabbi Meir, when he was about to eat the ola shel yerek, the vegetable leaf, he had done a tithing by casting his eyes upon one section of the vegetables at hand, and that would serve as the tithe for the other section of vegetables that he wants to eat. And if that be the case, so Rabbi Meir, in effect, did do a tithing. Amale, so he answers, Chozi man gavro rabo de komisad ole. Don't you see that a great man is reporting the story? If he's reporting the story, it must be that he took all of these different things into consideration and came to the conclusion that Rabbi Meir ate without any form of tithing. Otherwise, why would he trouble telling us the story? The Gemara has mentioned already a number of times that the Almighty does not allow even the animals of the righteous to stumble. That brings us to the new discussion, My Behemton Shel Tzadikim. What is this reference to the animals of the righteous? On the outside margin, under our No Say heading, we have an indication that this discussion lasts till Ad Sof Amid Beis. The story and all its related components continues to the bottom of Amid Beis. We are going to see in this story Maso Shor Pinchas Ben Yair, the trip that Rabbi Pinchas Ben Yair takes v'chamoro with his donkey u'pegishoso im Rebbe beveso, and his meeting with Rebbe in Rebbe's house. We use a firebox marking, that's this squiggly box around the Hemten Shalzikin, because the Gemara will be preoccupied with this for quite a while, as we said, till the end of Amid Beis. Hence this marking is used to show the centrality and significance of this point. We also would like to take note of the fact that we have used a long point marking, a nekuda, the nun that you see encircled with a descending vertical dashed line, to show, in fact, how long this Gemara lasts. And you'll see that if you follow down the Amud Beis, the left-hand side of the Gemara text, that this dashed, descending vertical line lasts till the bottom of Amud Beis. So that, as far as our mindset is concerned, we'll be dealing with the Behemton Shel Tzadikim and related matters till the end of Amud Beis. My Behemton Shel Tzadikim. What is this reference to the animals of the righteous that the Kodesh Baruch Hu, that the Almighty prevents them, the animals, from eating that which they should not eat? So the Gemara answers, the Rabbi Pinchas ben Yair have ka'ozil l'pinyon shvuyim. There was, as we say, once upon a time, Rabbi Pinchas ben Yair was on his way to perform the mitzvah of redeeming captive Jews. Poga be Ginoi Nahara. He met up with the river whose name was Ginoi.
Now Rav Pinchas Ben-Yair is walking along, and now he encounters a river, and there's no bridge for him to cross. Amalei, so Rav Pinchas Ben-Yair addresses the river and says, Ginoi, that's, as we said, the name of the river, Chalokli Meimach Vavor Boch, split your waters so that I can cross. Omar Le, the river answers back. Tosfos explains that it's the, could be the Sar Shel Yam, the ministering angel that's responsible for the waters. So Omar Le, Ata Hoylech Lasis Ritzoin Koinecho, you, the river says to Rav Pinchas Ben-Yair, you are on your way to do, to fulfill the will of your master, namely the Almighty's desires. Ani Holech Lasis Ritzon Koni, and I am flowing, and that's my role, to have the waters flow in my river bed, river channel. Ata sofek oise sofek I ata oise, you are on your way to redeem captives, but there's no guarantee that you will be successful in your attempts, so you're going on a mission that is full of doubt. Ani vadai oise, my flowing waters are a definitive fulfillment of the Ratzon, of the will of the Almighty. So are you asking me to stop a definite fulfillment in order to benefit you who are on your way to a doubtful fulfillment? Amale, so Rav Pinchas Ben-Yair says to the river, Im yata cholek, if you do not split, Gozrani olecho shelo yavru boch mayim leolam, I will issue a ruling that water shall never again travel in your channel. Upon hearing this threat, so cholakle, the river split. Have ahu gavro de have dori chiti the pischa. There was a man going along with, accompanying, or going along with Rav Pinchas Ben-Yair. Now this man was Dori, was carrying chiti, as wheat, lepischa, for the purpose of matzis of Pesach. Omale chalok le nami lahai debemitzvah osik. So Pinchas Ben-Yair says, I want you to split also for this man who is involved with a mitzvah. He's involved with carrying the wheat that he eventually will process into matzis. Cholak le, so the river split for him as well. Have hahu taya, the lova bahadayu. There was a taya. Taya is an expression referring to an Arab, often an Arab merchant, an Arab that was accompanying them. Omar le, chalok le nami lahai, the lo lema kachoisim livnei levia. I want you to split for him also, because if you don't, so it will be said by the public, ah, look at how they treat those that accompany them. So as to prevent any murmurings against the Jewish people, it was implored upon, the river was implored upon to split for the Arab as well. Cholak lay, and it did. Omar Rav Yosef, upon hearing this story, reacts, Kamo nofish gavro mi Moshe v'shisin ribon. How great this man, how much greater is this man, Rav Pinchas Ben-Yair, more than Moshe Rabbeinu and 600,000 people that were with him. The Ilu, that's a reference to the number of males over 20 in the Midbar. But it's a term that's often used to refer to the Jewish people in their exodus from Egypt. So we see a splitting taking place for three people here, and possibly three splittings. And Moshe Rabbeinu, with all of the Jewish people with him, there was only a one-time splitting. De'ilu hasam chad zimna. In the case of Moshe Rabbeinu, there was a singular splitting. V'hacha t'losa zimnin. Here there appear to be three splittings. There was initially for Pinchas Ben-Yair, then there was a request to have it split for the man carrying wheat for the matzis, and a third request and splitting for the Arab. So imagine this: you have just one man and those that are with him, and there were three splittings, whereas with Moshe Rabbeinu and all the multitudes that were with him, there was only one splitting. The Gemara says that, well, you can't say, you can't conclude what you just said, because Vidilma Hocho Nami Chadozimno. Maybe here too with Rav Pinchas Ben-Yair there was really one splitting, and Rashi explains, three lines from the bottom, Vilmoch enami chada zimno, elo misyore hoyo, shelo yachsru hamayim vishtifu hashnayim, voye medaber aleihem, she yamtin lohem hanor. It could be that there was really one splitting, but Rav Pinchas ben Yoyer's words were out of fear that the river may start flowing again and inundate or drown them, so that he had appealed to the river on two more instances that it should not restart the flow and thereby kill the people that were with him. So at this point, the Gemara says, as far as the greatness of Rav Pinchas ben Yoyer, we don't see conclusively that the water split for him necessarily three times. Elo, rather, if you want to speak about Rav Pinchas ben Yoyer in the context of Moshe Rabbeinu, you can say the following observation: Elo kimoshe v'shisin ribvon. Look how great this man, with those two people accompanying him, he seems to be given the same equal treatment as Moshe Rabbeinu with 600,000 people with him. That too, even though we don't have a greater number of splittings, but the fact that we have the same number of splittings for this much smaller group shows us how great they were, how great Pinchas ben Yoyer was. The story goes on. Iklo lahu ushpiza. Pinchas ben Yoyer arrived at an inn. Ramu le sairi lechamre, and they placed a bowl of barley for his donkey. Lo ochal, and the donkey did not eat from that which it was served. Chavtinu, so the grains were subjected to a cleaning process, and the thought being that maybe the animal is not eating from it because of the debris that was on these grains. So Rashi says at the top, chavtinu binapo, they were literally beaten, but they were subjected to a sifting process with a napo, that's a sifter. Chavtinu lenakosam, and this was in order to remove debris from them. So this is what they did for the donkey, lo ochal, but it continued to resist eating. Nakrinu is a further level of cleaning where stones and other debris are removed by hand from the grains. Lo achal, and even after that it didn't eat. Omar lehu dilma lo ma'asran. So Rav Pinchas ben Yoyer raised the possibility that maybe the food that the donkey was served was not tithed. Asrinu ve'ochal. They removed tithes from it, and it then started eating. Omar, so Pinchas ben Yoyer says, Aniyo zu, holeches lasus ritzon koino. This poor creature is on its way to do the to help to fulfill the ratzon of the Almighty. The atem achilim oisa tevolim, and you have the audacity to serve it untithed produce. The Gemara asks, Umi mechayev, who says that stuff that you serve an animal is bound to be tithed in the first place? We have the following source: Halukech lezera lebehemo v'kemach leoros v'shemen leneir v'shemen losuch bo esakelim. The person buys, let us say, from an amoretz. He buys grains for seed purposes for lezera, or he buys grains. Let's go over that point again. That he buys grains. Lezera for planting, u lebehema, or he buys grains for feeding an animal, and it says in this source that it's potter from tithing, from the demai tithing. Demai tithing is tithing of produce that one buys from someone who you suspect may not have tithed, from an amoretz. If you bought from an amoretz, someone who is not knowledgeable, and those are people that there is a certain level of suspicion concerning their tithing. And yet, if you buy it for the purpose of animal feed, the produce does not need to be tithed. So, what's going on with the Rav Pinchas ben Yoyer donkey? The Gemara explains, Hosam ha'itmar alo, regarding that source, it was stated, was concerning it, Om Rabbi Yochanan lo shanu elo shalokon mitchilu lebehema.
the exemption stated in this source, that's Poter Me'admai, is referring to grains that were purchased initially for the animal. Avalochen Mechilul Odom, V'nimach Aleim Lebeimah, Chayav La'aser. If you have grains that you bought initially for human consumption, and after you bought them, you changed your mind to serve them to animals, the grains nevertheless must be tithed because of the initial purchase of them for human consumption. V'hotanya, and support to this, is in the following source. Halokeach peros min hashuk la'achila v'nimlach aleihem lebehema. If a person bought produce from the market for his own benefit, for his own eating, and then switched his mind to use this produce for animal food. Hare ze lo itain lo lifnei be'amtov lo lifnei be'emas chavero elo imkein iser. He is not allowed to serve it to the animal, nor to his own animal, nor to his friend's animal, unless he tithes. So what do we see from here, from this source? We see that the produce that's bought initially for human consumption, even if you change your mind to feed it to animals, it nevertheless needs to be tithed. So that as far as the initial question, why should there be any tithing concern with regard to the food the donkey eats? The answer is, given that it's food that was bought for human consumption, then that creates the need for tithing. And even though you may have switched your had a change of heart or switched your mind to serve it to the animal, it nevertheless retains the obligation to be tithed. Shoma Rebbe. Rebbe heard, Rebbe is Rebbe Yudah Nossi, he heard that Reb Pinchas ben Yoyer was coming. Nofak liape, he went out toward him, to greet him. Omar lei, so Rebbe, upon meeting up with Reb Pinchas ben Yoyer, he says, Ritzon chasod etzli, would you kindly accede to dine with me? Omar lo, hey, so Reb Pinchas ben Yoyer says, yes, I agree to that offer. Tzavu ponav shel Rebbe. Rebbe's face lit up. He became overcome with joy. Rashi points out, Somach mipnei shelo hoyo Reb Pinchas rogi lehenos mishel achirim. He was very happy because this Reb Pinchas was someone that customarily did not want to benefit from others. Omar lo. Now, Reb Pinchas ben Yoyer starts a response to Rebbe's reaction of joy, and this response, or speech, if you will, lasts a number of lines. We've used a long indicator. To the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text, you'll see the expression Divrei Reb Pinchas encircled with a descending vertical dash line, indicating that all of these lines are part of Reb Pinchas' reaction. Omar lo. So Reb Pinchas says to Rebbe, who just had an expression of joy upon Reb Pinchas' acceptance of the invitation, he says, "Kimedume ato shemudar hano misraelani." It seems that you think that I have forsworn benefiting from fellow Jews. He says, that's not the case. I haven't forsworn or vowed not to benefit, but rather, Yisrael Kedoshim Haim. The Jewish people are holy and they are fit to benefit from. However, Yesh Roitze V'Eino, there are people that want to benefit others, want to give to others, but they themselves don't have the means. V'Yesh Sheyesh Lo V'Eino Roitze. There are those that have the means, but don't really want to benefit others from their with their goods and possessions. As far as the first group is concerned, those that want to give to others but don't have the means, so Reb Pinchas ben Yoyer wouldn't want to benefit from those kind of people. It's a burden upon them. Then there are this category of people that have the means but don't really want to benefit from others, and they may in fact extend invitations, but they in their hearts don't really want people to accept their invitations. Uksiv, and a pasuk that addresses this kind of behavior, says Al tilcham eslechem ra'ayin v'al tisov l'mata moisov. Don't take the bread from someone who is miserly, and don't yield to his offerings of pleasures. Ki kamo shoar benafsho kein hu echol shtei yom aloch libo bal imoch. He will offer invitations, come eat and drink with me, but his heart is not really with his mouth, is not really with him. The atah. But you, Rebbe, roitze, you have a desire to benefit others, v'yesh l'cha, and also have the means. However, mi'o hashto, misharivno, I am now in a rush, I'm hurrying. Misharivno indicates in a rush, de b'milso de mitzvah kotarachna, I am involved with a mitzvah. And as we saw earlier, he was on his way to Mekayim Pidyon Shvuyim to redeem captive Jews. However, ki hadarna, when I come back, asino, I will come, ayalno legaboch, and I will come into your place, I will come to you. Well, the time came, and he returned, came to Rebbe's place, ki osa, when Rapinchas came back, it happened, erl b'ahu pischa, erl means entered. He entered a particular entranceway to Rebbe's house, davu kaimin bay. Kudnaiso chivrsa, that standing in that in entranceway, like tied up on ropes, were kudnaiso chivrsa. These are white mules. Omar, Rav Pinchas ben Yair said, when he saw these animals, when they would kick someone, it would result in a severe type of injury. And Rav Pinchas sees that Rebbe possesses, keeps animals like this around. He says, "Malach hamavas beveisu shel zeh v'ani esod etzlo." Using a figure of speech, he says, "The angel of death," referring to these animals, "the angel of death is hosted in this man's house, and I am expected to eat by him. I have no intention of joining him for a meal." Shoma Rebbe nofak li'ape. Rebbe heard this and went out to speak to meet Rav Pinchas. Omale, so Rebbe said, and we'll have a series of suggestions on Rebbe's part, but each one will be rejected. Suggestions regarding these animals. So Rebbe says, listen, don't leave. As far as if these animals bother you, Mizav Nino Lehu, I will sell them. Omale, Rav Pinchas says, that's no solution. Lifnei lo site michshol. You'll be passing on the problem to somebody else. That's literally, don't place a stumbling block in front of the blind man. But the point is just like they are forbidden for you to have, as they are a dangerous type creature, they are forbidden to others as well. They also should not have them. So how can you think that you're getting rid of them by selling them to others, that will rectify the situation? You're only passing on the problem to someone else. And that's what is intended by this quote of Lifnei Iver Lo Siten Michshol. Okay, so Rebbe says, a second suggestion, Mafkarno Lahu. If I'm not allowed to sell them and then, you know, pass on the sin, so to speak, to someone else, you know what? I'll just declare them unowned. I'll mafkir them. I'll abandon them. So to that, Rav Pinchas ben Yair says, that's the worst thing to do. Mafshis hazeki, you're just increasing damage possibilities. Now the animals will be totally unowned, wild, and be a real threat to the public. So Rebbe says, Akarna lahu, I'll remove the animal's hooves, and thereby removing the dangerous aspect of these animals. As we mentioned at the outset, these white mules, if they kick someone, it results in great damage. So Rebbe says, I'll simply remove their hooves. So the Rav Pinchas says back, that's no solution. Ika tsar ba'alei chayim. You will be causing pain to the animal if you do that. So he says, Rebbe says, Katilna luhu. So I'll just kill these animals. To that, Rapinfas Vinyoro says, Iko bal tashchis. That's wanton destruction. So it's a waste. It's called bal tashchis. Don't waste things. Haveko mivatish beituva. Rebbe was imploring upon Rav Pinchas to join him for the meal and not to be concerned with the fact that he owns these white mules. So the pressure, or the attempt of Rebbe to convince Rav Pinchas to join him went on and on, and Gova Tuva Binayu, literally a mound or a hill, a mountain developed between them. This mountain is a representation of something that now separated between them, and as a result, it was clear now that Rav Pinchas Ben Yair was not going to be eating by Rebbe. Bocha Rebbe Yomar. Rebbe cried and concluded, "Ma b'chayein kach." Mind you, while the tzaddikim are alive, they are zoche, they merit having divine intervention to enable them to keep to their practice. And we'll see at the end of this Gemara, and Rashi points that out, that at the end of the Gemara it will be revealed that in fact Rav Pinchas Ben Yair's personal hanhoge, his personal practice, was not to benefit at all from other people. And you see from this story that the divine intervention caused Rav Pinchas Ben Yair to enter specifically the entranceway of Rebbe's house where the mules were located, thereby being the catalyst for everything that followed, and eventually Rav Pinchas Ben Yair's ability to keep to his practice of not eating by other people. So Rebbe notes that Uma b'chayei en kach, mind you, while the righteous are alive, they merit this divine intervention. B'misosan alachas kama v'kama, you can imagine all the more so when the righteous, when the tzaddik passes away. Rashi points out alachas kama kama, because on the third wide line, Rashi says sharei b'misosan gdolimis b'chayein. When they are, when a tzaddik passes away, they experience a higher level of greatness than when they are alive. The Omar Rav Chama Bar Chanina, Gedolim Tzaddikim B'Misasan Yosir Mibachayehen. Before going too much further in the Gemara, we have a bracketed section, and this bracket section is rather long, and you can see the length of it is indicated by the descending vertical dash dotted line that you see to the immediate right hand side of the Gemara text. At the end of these brackets, the Gemara points out, and we can read it now. It says there, second line from the bottom, Omru Olav al Rav Pinchas Ben Yair, it was said concerning him, Yomav lo botzal prusa she'eino shelo, he never in his life broke bread from a piece of from bread that was not his. And from the age that he was that he had achieved a certain amount of knowledge and maturity, he didn't even eat from his own father's table. Going back to the section in the brackets, it was Rebbe had exclaimed that if you see how much divine intervention the righteous merit while they're alive, when they're dead, all the more so. The Omar of Chama Bar Chanina, Gedolim Tzaddikim B'Misasan Yosir Mibachayehen. The righteous are greater in their death, more so than when they are alive. Shneamar, and the following will illustrate this idea. Vayhi Hen Kovrim Ish, Vinei Ro Es Hagdud. Vayashlichu es ho'ish bekever Elisha, vayelech vayiga ho'ish be'atzmas Elisha, vayechi vayokom al raglov. Pasuk says, describes a situation that there was a person that needed to be buried, and the person happened to be an evil man that died, and there was the people with this corpse were threatened by an army platoon, and so they took this man who was a Rasha and threw him into the grave in which the great prophet Elisha had been buried. The pasuk says that as soon as the body was thrown into the grave, it came into contact with the bones, the remains of Elisha. Upon that contact, upon the corpse's contact with Elisha's remains, it jumped back to life and walked away. It's pointed out that the issue of the greatness that you see in their death more than their lives, Rashi explains that when Elisha was alive and he was engaged in resuscitating someone who had died, he had to expend a great deal of effort in that resuscitation. And here you see that by mere contact with Elisha's remains, the person was resuscitated. Omale Rav Papa Labaye. Rav Papa raises a doubt regarding this, as this incident, as proof of Gedolim Tzadikim B'Misasan, may be V'dilma L'Kumibe Birkasa D'Lio D'Chtiv. Maybe the coming back to life, the resuscitation of this individual, was simply because Elio Hanovi had said Vayi No Pishnaim Ruchacha Elai. Elio Hanovi had made issued a bracha to Elisha. Elisha had requested to be twice that of Elio. Now Elio, we know, had revived a single dead individual. The Elisha had already, when he was alive, had resuscitated somebody who had expired. And here would be the second, meaning twice. Elisha is responsible for someone's resuscitation, that would make him twice as great as Elio. So it could be that the resuscitation of this individual wasn't a function of the greatness of Elisha, but rather it's because Elio Hanovi had blessed him that he would be twice as great. Omar Lay, so he answers, Ihachi, if this were a fulfillment of the brocha of Elio, so Hainu Desanya, would you say that the following is befitting a brocha? It says in a brisa regarding the corpse that was thrown into Elisha's crypt, it says Al raglav amar levesa lo holach. The corpse was resuscitated, so it got up on its feet, but it never got home. In other words, it walked away from the remains of Elisha and didn't live much longer than that, than the simple need to walk away from Elisha's remains. As it says in this source, it didn't even go home. It died. The individual died again. So that kind of a very minimum resurrection, minimum time being brought back to life, would not be characteristic of the fulfillment of a bracha. A bracha, when a bracha is fulfilled, it's fulfilled in a full sense, in a meaningful way. But just for a few minutes of regaining life wouldn't be characteristic, wouldn't be appropriate to say that that's a fulfillment of Elio's bracha. So our only conclusion is that the body, this Rasha, had to be distanced from Elisha, because Elisha was a tzaddik, and as we said before, Gedolim tzaddikim b'misasan yosim b'chayehen. The question now the Gemara asks, Elo b'ma ikayim? Then where was there ever a fulfillment of Elio's bracha, which indicated that Elisha would be twice as great? So the Gemara answers, Kida Omar Rabbi Yochanan, Sheripot Saras Namon. Elisha was responsible not only for the resurrection of the one child, but also he healed the tzaras of Naaman. Naaman was a general from the nation of Aram, and he was afflicted with the tzaras affliction. And the Gemara says, "Shehi shkulo kemes." A person who is victim of tzaras is considered like dead. Shinemar, it says in a different context with regard to Miriam, the sister of Moshe and Aaron, that when she had tzaras and the Moshe prayed on her behalf, he says in his tefillah, "Al no ti kames." So you see that in a state of tzaras, they are considered like dead. So the fact that Elisha was successful in healing someone from tzaras, in addition to his actual resurrection of a boy, these represent two types of resurrections, whereas Elio only did one. And it was there that one saw the fulfillment of Elio's brocha to Elisha. At this point in the Gemara, we have an internal bracketed section. You'll notice we have a note that's next to a double star that you see in the margin. Sograyim elu, these brackets, makifin sidra shomemros Rabbi Chanina, they surround a series of comments that are made by Rabbi Chanina, and you can see the Rabbi Chanina's comments are in diamonds. Rak ha'scholo kshiro l'gemara shlono. Only the first part, the first quote of Rabbi Chanina is really directly relevant to our Gemara. V'lozeh yesh le'ha'azer b'chitzim. And it's with that, and with to appreciate that, we will make use of the arrows that we provided also to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text. So, that having been said, Omar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Lama Nikra Shmon Yemim. Why are the Kudnaisa? You see, we have I've mentioned the arrows before. In the story, we saw, and if you can find the upper arrow, which is in the upper part of the wide lines, the Rabbi Pinchas ben Yoyer entered Rabbi's house through a doorway where there were these white mules. So, these white mules are referred to in the Torah by the term Yemim. So Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi says, Loma Nikra Shmon, why are the Kudnaisa called Yemim? And the answer is, She'emosam Muteles al Habrios. Yemim comes from the word emo, fear. Their fear is upon man. In other words, mankind, people are afraid of these creatures. They are dangerous. The Omar Rabbi Chanina, Miyomai lo sha'alni odom al makas preidu levona v'choya. Rabbi Chanina was a medical man. He was a doctor. And he says that it never happened that a person would ask me concerning an injury inflicted by a preidu levona. This is the kudnaisa, this white mule, and they would ever survive. They would ever live. The Gemara asks, but we see people that are injured by these white mules and continue to survive. Emo, we'll have to restate, what did Rabbi Chanina mean when he said, no one ever asked me or consulted me regarding the injury inflicted by the preda levona? What he meant to say was, v'choyos. Choyos is a reference to the injury getting totally healing. So Rabbi Chanina is telling us that the injury inflicted by the kick of this preda levona results in an injury that never fully heals. The Gemara asks, "V'ho kachazino demitzi?" But we see that they do get better. So what's Rabbi Chanina referring to when he says that they never get better? The chivron resh karayu karminon. We're not talking about the preda levona, we're talking about where the resh karaya, the top of their legs, are white. Apparently, that's the kind of animal who has white, the tops of their legs are white. When it injures, the injury that they inflict never fully heals. The pasuk says, "Ein oid milvado." There is no one other than the Almighty. Amar Rabbi Chanina, "Vafilu kshafim." Even black magic does not have any effect against that which the Almighty rules. Hahi itsa. There was a woman, David called Mahadra the Mishkal Afra Mitusei Kare Rabbi Chanina. She was a woman who practiced witchcraft, and part of her, in order to have her witchcraft get activated, she has to remove the dirt from under the feet of whomever she wants to victimize. So she was trying to remove the dirt from under the feet of Rabbi Chanina. Omala, Rabbi Chanina says, Shkuli, take whatever you like. Lo mistaya milsech, your spells will have no effect. Ein oid milvaldo ksiv. The pasuk says there is no other force in this world other than the Almighty, so that whatever you try to do is of no consequence. The Gemara asks, "V'omer Rabbi Yochanan, loma nikra shmon kshafim?" Rabbi Yochanan raised the point in asking why are kshafim called by that term? Kshafim, a reference to black magic. Shemakrishin pamalia shomala. Because they have a force they can work against. Pamalia Shomala is a reference to the heavenly court, so to speak. Kshafim is really an abbreviation of this idea of Makrishin Pamalia Shomala. And Rashi goes so far as to say that you can have a situation where the heavenly court did not decree someone to die, and a spell is cast against such a person, they will die. So that you have a force that works, that seems to work even against heaven, so to speak. So how is it that Rabbi Chanina feels so secure about himself against this woman or this witch? Shiny Rabbi Chanina. Rabbi Chanina is really different. Dinafisha Zechusei. He has great merits. He was a very pious individual, and hence someone who reaches that level of piety. In fact, the kshafim have no effect. However, commoners do have to concern themselves with kshafim insofar as in the way the Almighty created the world. He instilled a power in this entity called kshafim that they can have effects. The Omar Rabbi Chanina, Ein Adam Noikef Etzbo Milamato, Elo Imkein Machrizin Olav Milamala. A person does not injure his finger in this world unless there was a prior announcement that he should experience this from above. Shinemar Me Hashem Mitzadei Gever Kononu. From Hashem are the steps of man established. The Odomayovin Darko. These psukim are brought here to show that everything that befalls a person is a result of a heavenly decree. Omer Belazar, Dam Nikuf, the blood that one experiences from his finger injury, Meratze, serves to atone, Kedam Ula, like the blood of an Ola sacrifice. In other words, great significance is attached to someone who experiences such an injury. Omar Rava. Rava limits this to the gudol yamin, to the thumb, the right thumb, uvenikuf sheni, and the second injury, banging of it, namely the thumb is banged a second time before the first injury heals. And this is also only under the circumstances that the person was on his way to do a mitzvah. So that banging his thumb and having a blood flow a second time before the first one healed would produce a great deal of pain. And if this happened on his way to do a mitzvah, so it has this great atomic capacity to it. Amu alav al Pinchas ben Yair. It was said concerning Pinchas ben Yair, miyomav lo botza plusa shena shelo. He didn't break bread. Literally, he didn't eat bread from any bread that wasn't his. Umiyom shomal al daito, and from the point that he matured, that he had a certain level of knowledge as a boy, Lonene Misudas Oviv. He wouldn't even benefit from his own father's table. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.